Hello and welcome to Mind in Kingston's podcast, where we talk about all things mental health with people with a connection to the borough. I'm Vicky Bourne and I work as the charity's counselling and wellbeing manager. In this edition.
Clearly we're in a new phase of a concerning time with cost of living crisis. We're seeing a real rise. Around 20% of the people that are coming to us are coming because of family relationship issues. You know, it's the collective pressure that poverty puts on a whole family and the relationships that is the new concern.
Kingston University alumni Tim Barker is the CEO of Cooth, a digital mental health service founded in 2001. Currently partnered with local authorities in the NHS, Cooth provides a free service to over 15.9 million users. I started by asking Tim to explain exactly what Cooth is.
Thanks, Vicky. So, yes, Cooth is really a pioneer in digital mental health care, founded in 2001 by a therapist, and over that time really helped drive digital transformation of awareness and usage of the internet as a way to provide mental health support. Today, we primarily sell to and partner with NHS and local authorities to make our service freely available to the population. And across the country, around 15.9 million people have got free access to professional mental health care through our service. And to support them, we have a team of around 400 individuals, a large number of counsellors, psychotherapists, and clinicians.
Yeah, well, I first became aware of Cooth when I was working in schools, actually, and I was really impressed by talking to the team members. And back in those pre-pandemic days, it was a relatively small organisation, but it's really grown since then.
Yeah, as you might expect, both in terms of recognition of digital as a valid way to deliver a mental health support and some of the key benefits you get there, which is convenience and access. And especially for young people, digital natives, they live on their phones. And so the ability to reach people through their devices, but empower them to get this, to get the kind of support they wish is really quite a powerful proposition. But as you point there, a lot of the work that we will do, we've got a team of around 50 people that are our engagement ambassadors and leads. Every day they're going into schools, youth clubs, GPs to help promote this. And a lot of really where Cooth got started is supporting children and young people, 10 to 25 year olds. And we provide a service where there's no referral, you can self-refer. We aim to reduce stigma, so you don't need to give personally identifiable information to get support. And you're in charge. You're in charge of what kind of help you want. If you want to do a one-on-one chat with a professional counsellor, you can do that. If you just want self-therapy, you can do that. Or you might want to just engage with our peer support community and get help from others that have been where you are or support others.
So there's a whole menu for people to choose from. And of course, it's not just for children and young people anymore.
Exactly, that's right. So you're right. It's really a choice-based service. One of the foundations, really, that we felt for children, but also for adults, is often they're prescribed to, right? Especially children, they're prescribed by adults. Here's what you need. Here's what's good for you. But to make an individual, to empower them to be an active participant in their mental health journey, is the key to actually getting people to engage and get support for the long term. And so that we reflect that within our service. There's no set journey that individuals go through. You don't have to pass through assessments before you can request a one-to-one. And all of our professional support is provided over live text-based chat, not face-to-face, not video. And partly that's because, look, for people to open up, perhaps for the first time, is a big deal. And so doing that over text where no one can hear you in another room on a call, and it can be done very conveniently and in an anonymous way, we find that is an incredibly powerful way to help people open up. And because of that, we are often the first place people go for support because we're free, we're open, easy to access, and we're available, you know, to a growing population.
So finding different ways to communicate has really been a feature of the pandemic, hasn't it? We now offer therapy virtually over the phone, and text-based services are obviously increasingly popular and effective.
Yeah, I'd agree. There is one of my concerns about the future for digital mental health is the dehumanisation of it, right? The humanity of being able to interact with another person and not a chatbot and not a self-therapy meditation tool. The act of therapy is a very humanistic activity. So for us, it's really how we can use the internet to grow our reach, to provide new types of interventions, not just traditional, you know, 6 to 12 counselling sessions, but a lot of what we provide are very brief interventions. Someone needing help with advice, someone needing help in the moment. And these things don't, the idea to drop in and be engaging with someone, a professional, within 10 minutes of joining the service is a completely unknown model in the traditional healthcare system. So it also provides a new way, a new, you know, models to be able to be very person-centric about how we go about providing support, as opposed to traditionally being kind of system or institution-centric.
So no waiting lists.
Exactly, that's right. And no thresholds either, absolutely.
So you're not originally from a health tech background, and I was wondering what sparked your interest in this area.
You're right. I've been, in my last 2.5 years, I've been a keen learner into this new world of mental health. And there's probably two things that really brought me here. One is I've got an interest in mental health, unfortunately, through, you know, friends that I've lost to suicide along the way. And so those things stay with you along your journey. But the other side to that is I've spent 30 years of my career in technology, what's called startups and scale-ups. And over the previous probably decade, I spent a real focus of my time on data, insights, and artificial intelligence. And what I see as the incredible future potential for Couth that we are working on is the future for digital mental health care will not be an AI chatbot, but it will feel a bit more like Netflix. It will try and understand a bit more about what your wants and needs are. And it will try and bring the massive amount of content and resources that sit within our service to recommend to you things that might be helpful. And based on your feedback or lack of, figure out what next. Because there is not one size fits all. And so if we can utilise the digital breadcrumbs in our service of people that have utilised Couth before to your benefit to recommend to you things that might be helpful, that's an incredibly powerful way to help support individuals, do it more cost effectively, and support the system as well. So it's that really, it's the geek in me, Vicky, if I'm honest, that is also part of this, along with the ability to work in an organisation that's got a real world purpose. And I felt like it's either this or the environmental crises that are the two big challenges of our time. And this one, I feel, is where I should spend my time.
So you describe mental health as a global priority for our time, which actually fits very nicely with this year's World Mental Health Day theme, which is all about making mental health and well-being a global priority for all.
Certainly there's been some milestones along the way, recognition of the equivalence of mental health and physical health, the definition of the NHS long-term plan in 2019 that really started to set real targets around this. And then more recently, globally in the US, for example, coming out of COVID, and I think globally, a recognition that mental health services weren't in great shape going into it, and they're in even worse shape coming out of it.
Absolutely.
So I think there's...
People are really struggling to find help.
Yeah, there's, and it's a system that is essentially overflowing at absolute breaking point, really. But that also, there may be a positive to come from this, which is a recognition of the need to invest further upstream. So by the time someone is sitting in an IAPT session with a professional, there were maybe 10 or 12 opportunities to engage with them earlier that were just missed along the way. So if we can think of this moving away from a treatment-based approach to a preventative-based approach, where we can then provide fast, effective, free help to the population, we can hopefully reduce the demand for those stretched acute services. And that's really the role that we see that companies and tools and technologies and organisations like Couth can do, which is to help apply new technology and new approaches to a very old problem, but innovate effectively to do that.
Right, so obviously we've just emerged from a very difficult couple of years, and I wondered whether you'd seen sort of changing patterns in your work, you know, changing patterns of the kind of problems that people are coming to seek help with and support with. What's been going on, or just the number of people presumably using your services?
Absolutely. So, and I have to say, it continues to rise. It's not as though COVID was a chapter and when it ended, we all went back to how things were before. You know, our service does generate quite a lot of data that gives us an insight into the presenting issues that the population faces, which helps us, and also when we're working with different regions in the country, to identify the specific areas of concern in a specific region. But without sort of dwelling too long on it, you know, there are, you know, as you might expect, we've seen a concerning rise in more high level of acuity. 60% of people that come to our services would qualify on an acuity scale as severe. We see an increase in suicidal ideation. That's about 25% of people that we see through the service. An increase in self-harm. Over the lockdown, we saw around a 70% increase in eating disorders and eating difficulties. What we're starting to see, I was looking at the data the other day, clearly we're in a new phase of a concerning time with cost of living crisis upon us. We're seeing a real rise. Around 20% of the people that are coming to us are coming because of family relationship issues. You know, it's the collective pressure that poverty puts on a whole family and the relationships that is the new concern. And so with this data, we provide it to NHS, we provide it to the Cabinet Office, we provide it to a large number of stakeholders so that they can then get ahead of the next wave that's going to hit, which is referrals into NHS services for more acute demand. So if we could be the canary in the coal mine, so to speak, as the first place to go, we can help people prepare for change better. And that's been one of the challenges that all systems, including healthcare systems, have faced in the last few years.
Of course. Yep. So they just really need the funding to do that. And that's another big challenge that we're going to be facing as well.
We can give some pointers to where that should be directed. And I think that's really part of what we see our role here as an overall working with the NHS and healthcare systems is to provide an early radar effectively into some of the changing issues and challenges within the population.
Yeah, and you've spoken too about normalising mental health, about embedding it into everyday culture, into the workplace culture too, which things are slowly changing there in some sectors, but maybe not all as yet, but that's another of your passions, I believe.
They are, and I think, you know, it's also different by gender as well, but and industry type. So a lot of the work that we do for corporates is really around normalising this. Making it that also means you've got to train your leadership, train your managers into how do you bring this into the language of business. But I think there are some great positive signs, and it will be generational. I mean, my two kids are in their early 20s. It's very much a topic of discussion and a healthy one as well. I think to know really how people are in themselves and what their feeling is an important superpower to have, right? Because when you can ask for help, you can get it. And so that will be a long journey, but also, you know, because we offer an anonymous by design service, we're not resting on normalization being the solution to this. We will reduce stigma, because if you've got, you may feel shame about something you're going through, especially as a man, you may not want to open up. And so the ability to do that in a really safe space, an anonymous space where there's no connectivity to your phone number, your email address, your identity, again, a very powerful, or your gender is a very powerful thing.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Okay, so finally, Tim, I wanted to ask you about your connection to Kingston and the borough, really. And I gather you did your first degree at Kingston Uni, is that right?
I did. I'm going to go way back now into the late 80s and early 90s. I did a 4-year sandwich degree in computer science, of all things. I spent time in Kingston, Hampton Wick, Richmond, Surbiton. I did a year's industrial placement in New Malden.
Oh, wow. So you know all aspects. even crossing the river.
Exactly. I've crossed the river. So I had a wonderful time there. And I feel that it's nice to be able to talk with you on this podcast. There's a little bit of connecting the dots there of where my journey and my career very started in its very nascent stages to where I am today.
Yeah, well, that's really nice to hear. Any particular favourite places in Kingston? And you can include pubs and bars.
I'd probably say, I would imagine many of them have closed down by now. But I, of course, spent an abundance of time in the student, Kingston, as it was back in the day, KPSU as it was in the day, the Kingston Polytechnic. And I was a keen sportsman back in the day there. So I spent a lot of time in their football and basketball clubs on Penryn Road. So I had a great time there. And I did actually, it was a place that my eldest son was considering for university. Unfortunately, he didn't quite get the grades to get in there. But yeah, lots of happy memories.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Tim. And thank you so much for being a guest today as well.
Well, thank you, Vicky. It's been a real pleasure.
I was talking there to Tim Barker, CEO of the digital mental health platform, Couth. Before we go, do have a listen out for the other chats in this series. You can find them wherever you usually download your podcasts. And we'd be really grateful if you subscribed and left a review too. It really helps to spread the word. I'm Vicky Bourne of Mind in Kingston. And until the next time, take good care.